This is Peter Ayala, and you're listening to Voices of Berendo. John Gomez and I wanted to connect our school community together during this time of separation by mixing sound bites and pieces of audio from your voices. If you're still listening at this point, we want to thank you for sticking through this project with us. We made a small change in our format and broke our discussion into three 20-minute parts to make it easier for you as a listener. You'll recognize the breaks as music interludes. Also, since the discussion in this episode pertains to immediate events happening during the last week of May 2020, we decided to read email responses from listeners so that time was not wasted compiling additional audio. We appreciate all the love and support we received, and even though this is the final piece to Voices of Berendo, we hope you come back as a listener to future projects. John, you there?
Hello?
Yeah, perfect. You there? Hello? You're muffled, man.
Why does he keep saying hello like that? Sounds like
yeah, and no.
Sounds like our grandparent trying to figure out how to use FaceTime for the first time. It's like, hello? Hello? Yeah, we can see you. We can hear you. Just say something. Hello? This is John.
He's having issues.
There we go. Yeah, well, I am. There you go. As usual, I'm having issues, all kinds of issues over here. You don't have to laugh so hard, Wilson.
You don't want to hear what I said beforehand.
No, I probably don't. You know what I mean? But remember all the kind things I say to you, okay? Let's just remember that.
I remember the mother comment, too.
Oh, my God. You know, I've given Wilson no fewer than 400 compliments in the entire time over there, and I meant them all. And I've given her some big compliments, too. Yeah. She remembers the one little tone-deaf thing that I said, you know?
Hey, before we get ahead of ourselves, let's introduce ourselves. So my name is Peter Ayala. This is...
Wait, oh, we can't see which way we're going. Oh.
Erica Wilson.
Yeah, hi.
And John Gomez. I'm happy we were able to get together and talk for a little bit, even though we're kind of in this moment of just so much going on.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to get your guys' thoughts and just get us in the same room. And so thank you for taking the time to do that.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, no, this is nice. It's this is podcast number 3. And it's like, this is like act 2 of a disaster film.
I know, it's like, exactly.
What's going to happen next, right?
Well, I'm excited.
I was telling Erica that I wrote some stuff down. I want you guys to feel like this is just an open forum, so don't let me dictate the conversation. But I did write some things down just to kind of like frame the direction we're going to go.
Okay.
But whatever's on your heart, whatever's on your chest, get it out. If we end up on a tangent or we end up somewhere else, like, don't even mind me. When we started this, I really didn't want to get political at all. I just kind of wanted to do something creative. But we get to a point where things just end up becoming political. I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Right.
That's just real life, you know? Mm-hmm. And what we're witnessing now and what we've been seeing lately is, and I'm going to read this really quick because the First Amendment, I know, what was it, like a month ago, people were protesting and very angry about the Second Amendment, about, you know, being stuck at home, being able to bear arms and all that.
Right.
And then now we're witnessing all these people have their First Amendment put in danger. And I'll just read it really quick with the First Amendment. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but really quick. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the right to peacefully protest and assemble, and the right to petition the government. And I think we witnessed a few of those be put in danger. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
America. Yeah.
As far as, you know, the protesting, I mean, I think it's something that was a long time coming. We live in a society where, you know, people of color are constantly having things put upon us and being forced to accept things that aren't right. I'll just put it like that. And, you know, enough of it's going to happen to where something is going to happen. You keep shaking up a bottle that's closed, a carbonated bottle that's closed. It's eventually going to explode unless you take the lid off. And so basically I think this is kind of what we have here is just, basically, people saying that, look, tried it a number of different ways. We've tried to speak about it. We've tried to show you. We've tried everything from A, B, and C to X, Y, and Z, and you're still not listening. So here we are.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I mean, it always comes, you know, at a price. Like, I'm honestly, I'm kind of numb. Like, yeah, I'm pretty numb. It's on one end, and then I'm very sparked on the other end. So, yeah, I don't know how to like translate that. But.
Well, sometimes I think of myself as not that old, and then I have to think again, and I'm like, wait a minute, I lived through the Rodney King riot.
Yes,
and it's not like I was a little kid. I was actually a teenager.
I was a little kid, but I remember that.
30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
So 30 years ago, and it's still the same. But that was a horrific thing. But it was, if you think about it, it was small scale. It was just stuck to LA, and then now we're at this uprising nationwide. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think with oh, I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Erica.
I was just gonna say, from what I remember, because I was small, and I remember when I saw like the footage of Rodney King being beaten by the police officers. That was new for all of us because nobody had ever seen anything like that. I know, like, I mean, within the Black community, we've talked about, you know, police officers just, you know, doing the worst to us under just what should be normal, like a normal pullover or any type of circumstance. And so, like, now that when that videotape came out, you know, now the world got to see, like, okay, four officers are jumping on a Black man. He's not fighting them. He's not, he doesn't have a weapon as far as we saw, but he's just, you know, on the ground and he's getting pummeled. And, you know, it sparked us here in Los Angeles. I can't speak for like any adults at that period of time. I just remember being very afraid because from what I saw on the TV, that guy looked like my dad, you know, but I knew it wasn't my dad because it was Rodney King and my dad's name is not Rodney King. However, you can't tell the difference when you're sitting back. And I think, what was I like 9 years old, 8, 9 years old when that happened? And then everything that happened after that, you know, I remember like when the riots broke out, me and my brother were at home. It was the summertime, I believe. And my mom was an essential worker. She was a single parent. She had to go work. She worked over at Kaiser off Sunset. And so, you know, me and my brother were at home. And I remember like some of the people in the streets lit a building on fire next to our apartment building. And me and my brother were out on the patio just throwing like cups of water on the patio to keep the apartment from going up in flames. But yeah, it was contained just to Los Angeles, as far as we could see, because this is where it happened. And this is where, you know, people have been talking about like how notorious LAPD was for their brutality against men of color.
You brought up a good point though. That was something I saw recently. There was a post about that. And it was like, it said, racism is not getting worse. It's getting caught on camera. The technology that everybody has in their hands these days, it's easier to catch these things, share them, they become viral, and
we're still here.
You know, what's striking to me is I was hopeful enough and maybe even naive enough to think that real progress was being made, you know. Unabashedly, my favorite president of all time is Obama for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us, maybe I shouldn't say a lot of us. I can't speak for that many people. I'll speak for myself. I was under the illusion. I'm like, okay, this is real progress. You know, we have our first Black president. The guy.
I cried that day, man.
Yeah,
I cried
me too.
That day. I really thought it was going to be. I was like, you know what? This is a change, and we're witnessing history right now. I literally had tears, and then. I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say, I thought, you know, we turned the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And all that we seem to have done is just driven racism, you know, under the rug for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I think Donald Trump, is a response to that. I think voting him in is a response to that. People getting back to their core values. And normally I don't talk politically, but here I'm going to, because that's my feeling about it, is that it's really difficult to have voted for Donald Trump and justify any kind of morality or wanting holistically the betterment of, you know, a humankind.
Even if you, I mean, you're talking about Donald Trump, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Can I throw this in here really quick? This is because I just ran across this article the other day, and pretty much in 1932, right after World War One, we were going into a depression. Mm-hmm. Hoover was president, okay, and it was towards the end of his term. And he felt like he was losing it. He wasn't going to be reelected. These World War One veterans, I guess they were promised these, they called them bonus certificates for serving. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, you know, their lives were devastated. So then they all camped in front of the White House. We're talking about like 10,000 people, and not just soldiers, like families. And as a show of strength, this is like a history repeating itself, as a show of strength, Hoover ordered the U.S. military to clear them out, and there happened to be casualties. Mm. And so that came out in headlines that an infant had been killed.
Wow.
And so that led to his campaign pretty much being killed, and then Roosevelt ended up winning in November. In my mind, I'm just like, whether you voted for Trump or not, I think common sense would tell you like it's not working out, and maybe any type of change would be better than what we're hearing now. You know, that's just how I see it as an educator. Like if a parent asked me, you know, how can I help my child get better at this, or how can I work? Well, have you taken any action to make that change happen? Mm. Well, if you haven't, then it's not going to happen. You know?
But the thing is, I don't think change happens unless people's core values change.
Right.
One of your core values is, you know, your anti-abortion, and you feel that the penalty for voting for somebody that is pro-choice is going to hell, then you're always going to vote for a certain party that claims to be Christian. And, you know, Donald Trump, despite all of his clear hatred toward most, you know, segments of humanity.
No. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's kind of the connection that I was trying to make. And you put it in plain terms, your core values. So my hope is that incident that happened hits enough of those, I'm labeling them as fringe conservatives. You know, they voted for Trump, but they're like so borderline that incident of clearing people. I don't know if you guys saw it, but him clearing protesters out with tear gas.
I heard about it. I've been trying to avoid social media. I'm gonna tell you, for me, when I see, so I mean, we know that the catalyst for all of this was like the icing on the cake of George Floyd being murdered in front of our eyes. I've been kind of avoiding social media to a certain degree, because it's depressing. Like even the protesting is necessary, but it's depressing because it's like we go through this over and over and over again. And what is the end goal? What is it that we want? George Floyd is not going to come back. We're still going to have officers on the force who have whatever agenda they have. Whether it's poor training or they're actually out there with some like particular agenda, we don't know. And then there's, you know, some officers that are there that, you know, obviously that are there to do their job, but they don't speak up. I've been avoiding social media. So like the tear gassing thing, I kind of catch it when somebody says something, but I haven't seen it.
Well, this is what happened. There was peaceful protesters right in front of the mm-hmm. White House. This has been going on for a few days. Now, I think it was Monday, he was going to go out across somewhere, but decided to go under through a bunker. So I guess he felt bad or negative or shame towards mm-hmm. that, of how he reacted. Mm-hmm. So then the following day, he decided he was going to put a show of strength and clear everybody mm-hmm. out. And so they just started shooting tear gas and pretty much going in a line and shoving everybody out of that wow. area for him to walk from the White House to a church and then be in there. And it was just a photo op, Erica. He just went to the front, took a picture with the Bible and freaking walked off.
Is that okay?
That
I saw the picture of him yeah, with the Bible. I mean, I have my own little thing. I'm not going to say it out loud because I'm going to get into a world of trouble.
just say it.
I saw the image of him with a Bible in his hands. I was like, that couldn't have been a real Bible because it would have busted in flames if he actually had a real one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I mean.
But that's crazy.
That was pretty much the incident. And so, yeah, it is crazy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the exactly the iconography that he wants to put out to the world or, you mm-hmm. know, to his supporters to say, you know, I'm Christian. It's just a symbolic thing. It's just at the surface. If you dig any deeper, there's no core values that pertain to all of humanity there.
But how is that? This is where I'm really confused when it comes to, and you know, if anybody listening is a hardcore Christian, I apologize. I'm not trying to offend, but you know, Christians are supposed to help people. You know, that's one of the things that's like really big is doing walking as Christ walked. And if you're lighting up people with tear gas so that you can go take a picture in front of a church with a Bible, isn't that? No, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And I can't see how anybody who's a Trump supporter and considers themselves Christian can justify that.
Did you guys know that tear gas was banned after World War I? In warfare, though. But they wrote something up called in the Chemical Weapons Convention of 1993. Mm-hmm. And you can still use it in domestic law enforcement and crowd control. You can't use it on a battlefield.
Or people are shooting at you.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. But you can use it in law enforcement. I didn't know. I was seeing people post like, isn't that illegal? That's been illegal for the longest time from the Geneva Protocol, blah, blah, blah. And then I actually looked it up and I'm like, wait a minute. Really? They still have the right. They still have the right to use that just with citizens, regular citizens.
Who aren't shooting, who aren't bombing them,
yeah,
who are holding up signs.
Who aren't armed.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a show of strength. You know, he thinks it's a show of strength. You know, somehow he's a strong president. He's not going to put up with any of this nonsense. And I promise you, there's somebody watching Fox News that's cheering him on. So, yeah.
Yes. Oh, of course.
Right there. I kid you not. I was in I took my dad to the VA, the Veterans Administration Hospital out in Florida. This is Florida, right? So this is kind of a hotbed for Republican activity. And, you know, people have hearing issues. So they're playing Fox News louder than you can possibly imagine. And I walked through it and I swear to God, like you say to yourself, okay, people probably say these things, but no, that can't be because that sounds like it'd be dialogue from a movie. Nobody would just say this. I walk by and this guy says, you know, that's why I like Trump. He talks with small words. He says it as it is.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. John, I said that exact same thing. That's why he appeals to most people is because everything is like he talks like he's speaking to a third grader.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's unfortunate because, I mean, they said like the comprehension level, everything that we've been fed over the years through media and other sources is at the level of a third grader. Any higher than that, you're going to yeah. just tune out. Unless you just continue to go further. But yeah, like, I mean, he doesn't, I mean, we can tell, like, when he makes up words that sound big to him, but sound stupid to us, like kafefe and bigly, and I don't remember the other words that he said, but I'm like, this dude thinks he's talking to these people like they're children and they're eating it up. They love it.
And apparently you can just lie now, you know? I have, oh. I'm the most fit president of all time. It's like, I have eyes. I can see you are not the most fit president of all times. You know, I had a full stand during the inauguration and you see bleachers and bleachers that are empty. You know, it's just like, there is no end to this man's lying. You know what I mean? So I feel like I most of us have been on to him from the very beginning.
Yes. But
here's something interesting that I found out the other day. Okay, so he's completely mishandled the pandemic. I think most of us feel that way. You take a place like Germany, you know, Angela Merkel has handled it very well, and her approval rating is at 80%. Boris Johnson from the UK, he hasn't handled it very well. He's kind of like their version of Trump, except dumber, if you can imagine that. Mm. And his ratings have gone down by 15%. That makes sense. You know, she's doing well, they go up. He's not doing well, they go down. Trump's have remained flat. There is nothing this guy can do that will persuade people that he's not doing a good job. His core base.
Wow.
I can ask you, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this, but the Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter.
I'm sorry. Good one. How long is this show?
Well, do you want let me start off. Let me just start off one thing. I'll then you can spin off. But here's a quote I got for you. Okay, we said Black Lives Matter. We never said only Black Lives Matter. We know all lives matter. We just need your help with hashtag Black Lives Matter because Black lives are the ones in danger. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that whole controversy going on?
John, you want to go ahead? Because I can go on.
Well, I want you to go on. I think say is a lot less important. I think people do get things confused, you know. The only thing that I advocate for all the time, and you guys know this, is people who stutter. And yes. I have poured at least $100,000 into that effort. Mm-hmm. And that is in the form of educating people, making a film, social media, just so many ways to kind of get the word out there.
Right.
And it's not to say that I don't care about other communication disorders, right? It just means that I have chosen to focus on stuttering because it's something that really hasn't been highlighted in our field. Now, I know it's not equivalent to this, but I think for some people, you know, they misconstrue it. Like, oh, well, if you're saying, you know, Black Lives Matter, you must be saying that has more importance. I think, and please tell me if I'm wrong, I think it's like, no, that's where the focus needs to go right now because things are so out of whack. There's such an imbalance of rights and expectations. You know, as somebody who has been pulled over by the police, you know, back when I lived on an Indian reservation multiple times, I was never pulled out of my car. I was never roughed up. I don't have an inkling of what happened. I just know what it is to be pulled over unjustly. Mm. But to have somebody put a knee on your neck for 8.5 minutes, I just don't think people have any perspective on that. And that is absolutely where our focus needs to be. So that's why it's Black Lives Matter. But tell me if I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely correct. I've argued this to the point, like I said, at this particular point, I'm not arguing with anybody on my social media accounts. If anybody, well, like I said, I haven't really posted anything because people know by now where I stand with certain things. I love all people. I love being Black. I love Black people. You know, and like the lives we live, and I'm even going to say this, like as a Black woman, I can't fully comprehend the life of a Black man because it's different. There's just certain aspects that I won't understand, but I do get them because I hear about them. All of my brothers, great men, have all had incidences, multiple incidences that are numbered in the tens. Some of them, a couple of my brothers in the hundreds, and I have a couple brothers who have never broken a law, have never gone out of their way to wrong people. And they've interacted with they've had negative interactions with the police. I have had several negative interactions with the police, and they were unjust. I actually posted a question on my page today asking, how old were you the first time that you had a gun pulled on you by a police officer? For me, I was 14 years old. I was living in Texas, and I remember there was an incident where two of my neighbors got into it. One of my neighbors had killed the other neighbor's cat, and then he brought the cat to school in a plastic bag and put it in the other neighbor's locker. And because of that, this huge fight broke out. I'm nowhere near the fight. I've not been in the area or anything like that. But when the police show up, the school police show up, I'm sitting outside, and the police officer is asking all of us, you know, for some type of identification, things like this. I kind of like laughed it off because I was just like, I wasn't there. And I got up to leave, and he pulled a gun on me. This was in Pflugerville, Texas. Excuse me. When I hear people say all lives matter as a response to people saying Black Lives Matter, it really makes me think that, like, we know, we've heard enough stories and seen enough news reports and things like that to understand that things in this country pertaining to anyone of color, any minority, is unfair. But especially, and I don't want to make it sound like we're on this hierarchy of turmoil, but for people who are born here and are of African descent or descendants of enslaved Africans, it's been a rough way to go.
Yeah.
Extremely rough way to go. Our schools in our neighborhoods are jacked up, or have been severely jacked up. Our neighborhoods are jacked up. As a matter of fact, going back to the LA riots and the Watts riots back in the day, I can't remember what year that was for the Watts riots, but those areas have never been like redeveloped. There's some areas, there's some parts of like LA where the riots happened, the 92 riots happened, or 91 riots happened, and then the Watts riots that still look exactly as they did after, you know, they were torched or burned or destroyed or whatever.
Mm.
I've gotten to the point where I'm not arguing for my life or the lives of Black people to matter to other people. I think now that fight is out of our hands, we've have enough evidence to show that, like, yo, this is what we're living with. I'm gonna tell you, I get very afraid when my brothers leave from where I can see them, or even when, you know, Big Jordan, anybody that I know that is Black, Latino, or whatever, when they leave my sight, if I love you and I care about you, when you leave my sight, I am concerned until I can see you again. There were times when my brother, when we were little, he would leave and go out of the house. And if he didn't come back at a time that I expected, I would get nervous because I would be afraid that he ran into the police at some point. And when he come back, I would be okay. I wasn't afraid of him, you know, getting into a car accident. That was like a lesser concern. But I was more afraid of him running into a police officer and not coming back and getting into it with somebody that just had like a power trip and just not coming home.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Somebody was trying to explain this online, and they were saying, imagine you had a child, you had a son or a daughter, and your son or daughter was killed. They died. They passed away. You were at their funeral, giving a eulogy. And you were going through all these things about how special your child was, how much you love them. And then somebody came up and grabbed the mic from you and said, well, all children are special. And that's, they were trying to frame it in that way.
There've been I've heard a number of anecdotes and from multiple people of multiple, nationalities and racial backgrounds, and it's, to me now, it's sadly comical, because even with all these anecdotes and analogies and all this other kind of stuff, there's still some people who either really don't get it or refuse to understand
Yeah,
it. That was one that I saw today where like they were, oh,
they're. I think it's
it is
both.
both.
It's both. You're exactly right. Yeah, they don't get it, one, and they're gonna refuse. They're just gonna refuse. It's not in their psyche to open up in the world, open up and accept the world like that.
That's, I think, who is in charge of the fixed mindset and growth mindset insert for our work site? Whoever that was, like, I think this is perfect because those who refuse to get it have a fixed mindset. They refuse to grow, you know? I saw a couple parables. I saw one where a friend was talking about how, like, when the whales became endangered, then there was this whole campaign about saving the whales. And they said, you know, what if you were doing this whole thing about saving the whales and somebody jumped up and they're like, well, all sea life matters, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you were bringing up about growing up in Texas, right?
Go ahead.
Can I share with you guys this? This just went viral this week, actually. This young guy, Cameron Welch, he's an 18-year-old from Houston. Did you hear about this? Okay, he uploaded this video, and it's basically the unwritten rules of growing up as a black man. And it's just some unwritten rules my mom makes me follow every single day growing up. And so let me know if the audio comes through, because I don't want to speak for him. I just want to play it.
Don't put your hands in your pockets. Don't put your hoodie on. Don't be outside with no shirt on. Check in with your people. It don't matter even if you're down the street. Don't be out too late. Don't touch anything you're not buying. Never leave the store without a receipt or a bag, even if it's just a pack of gum. Never make it look like there's an altercation between you and someone else. Never leave the house without your ID. Don't drive with a white beat on. Don't drive with a do-rag on. Don't go out in public with neither. Don't ride with the music too loud. Don't stare at a Caucasian woman. If a cop stops you randomly and start questioning you, don't talk back. Just compromise. If you ever get pulled over, hands on the dashboard, and ask, could you get out your license and registration?
Oh my God. There's a couple things he missed, but that's the talk. That's the talk. He also there's take the bass out of your voice. Yes, ma'am, no, sir, or whatever when you're speaking to an officer. Don't argue with them. That's crazy. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. That just like just lowered my energy. This is
He's
crazy
already.
because I mean, like even now, like especially after Sandra Bland died, you know, it's become like black women are and black families are giving their girls that talk. I had that talk. We call it the talk. It's not the birds and the bees talk. It's the when you leave this house, do what's necessary for you to come back home talk. I didn't realize that I was doing certain things unconsciously. Like for me, this is interesting because I got pulled over a couple years ago because I was I was going through the carpool lane. I was going from Barrendo to Dominguez first to get to my night class, and I had a fast track because normally during the time when I'm going, there's a lot of traffic, and I forgot to switch the transponder back over to one. So I got in this carpool lane and immediately I was pulled over and the police officer said it was because my transponder read as two. And he asked me to pull out my driver's license and registration. And this was like right after Philando Castile had gotten killed, murdered. And I started crying. And I told the officer, I can't do that, sir. And he said, I'm just asking you for your license, registration, and proof of insurance. And I told him, I said, sir, all of my stuff is right there in my wallet. Now, I'm going to tell you like the stories about my wallets, but I told him, and I had dreams about this, but I was so afraid. I told him, sir, I don't want to wind up being an accident. So I don't want to reach and grab for my, and this is broad daylight. We're on the 110 freeway. We just came up the 110 freeway for, on the entrance at 39th, I think it is. And I have my hands. This is the talk. You take your, you turn your car off. You put your, take your keys out of the ignition, put the keys on the hood, put roll down your window, put all your information or whatever is necessary on the dash or on the wherever it's necessary so that they don't see you reaching, putting your hands where they can't see them. And then there's other components. But I wound up not grabbing my wallet. And I told him, I said, I'd rather you take me out of this car, handcuff me, impound this car, and I pay for it later, even if it's going to cost me a couple hundred dollars, than for me to reach for my wallet and, you know, you get jittery and I wound up another accident and a hashtag. And I didn't. He eventually wound up letting me go because we kept going back and forth. But that's where we were at with that. And it's depressing. It's really depressing when you have to go through that. And my story about the wallets is all of my wallets, I've never had a plain colored wallet. All of my wallets are like brightly colored. They're like these crazy unusual colors with these weird designs, things like that, because I don't want my wallet to be mistaken for something else, for a weapon or anything like that. And they're saying, oh, she was reaching for this and that and the third. That was prior to Philando Castile. As a matter of fact, that came about when the Amadou Diallo situation happened, where the gentleman, you know, came out of his house and I think he was reaching for his wallet and the police shot him like on his stoop. And he wasn't even the person they were looking for. But they shot him like 41 times and then only to find out that he was reaching for his wallet.
Wow.
Like there's all these stories. There's all this stuff and it's just like,
well, it's the what's her name? I'm sorry, I'm going blank. The one that just happened recently, where they barge into her apartment.
Well, there's a couple of those. There's Jefferson, and then there's Taylor, Breonna Taylor. Yeah,
Breonna Taylor.
And see, that's this.
Some of those things seem so like that one. It doesn't make sense. That one feels like almost feels like she had information on somebody. And they just come in and they just want to silence it. Because how do they barge in and just shoot her and then the boyfriend or whatever is still alive?
Right.
And they were laying together.
There's so many of these stories. I mean, like, even when we go back to, and I don't want to mispronounce this woman's name, but I'm going to call her Miss Jefferson. The one that was in her house playing video games with her nephew. And the police officer showed up at her house, but he was at the wrong house. And he winds up. He sees she does have a weapon. I think they were in Texas. She has her weapon out, but it's on a table, not really close to where they are. And he is sneaking around the house at like a late hour in the evening. And he says, "Freeze, don't move." And she jumps, you know, not knowing who this is. He didn't announce himself. And there's body cam footage of this. He doesn't announce himself. And as soon as she jumps, he shoots her and he kills her with her nephew, her underage nephew sitting right there beside her. You know, there's too many of these stories. And that's why it's so depressing, because we hear these stories all the time. We see these things on the news. We're conditioned to think that this is how it's supposed to be. And it's not. It's not. But we see it enough times and it's like my mind is fighting against the conditioning. Our minds are fighting against the conditioning who constantly see this all the time. And then there's some who just accept it and say, this is what it is. I'll never be there.
I was crying today. I didn't tell Zuli. I was laying down with Noah for his nap. And I had tears, man. Mainly because, I mean, I'm not even black, and it's just because I know deep down in my heart this is not the end of it. This is not the end of it. I know it's not gonna stop here. It's gonna take way more than this to even change anything. And I don't know, deep in my heart, it just hit me. And I'm just thinking about the world that we have to continue living in. You know, you would think this would have had major changes in the past 50 years, and it didn't, leading into 2000. And then now we're in this next century and we're still.
Well, we have to understand too that within 50 years, I mean, there's still people who are around during those times on both sides of the aisle who are still alive. And so those things, like I was taught by parents who grew up during Jim Crow, right? And so whatever it was that they had to deal with during that time, I'm getting that type of parenting from them, who got their parenting from someone who was taught by parents during the Reconstructive era. So for us, the Civil Rights era, the Civil Rights Act didn't happen until like my mom and my dad were, my mom was young. My dad was like a teenager, you know, but there was still all the stuff that had already been ingrained in them during their formative years. And so then you have us, and then you have the generation underneath us who are like, you know, the generation underneath us really don't understand what's going, like they understand, but they're like, no, forget this. We're not dealing with this. I'm not about to live like this. And then we have our generation who's like, half of us are kind of going along with what we were taught from beforehand. And then there's some of us that are rebelling against it.
By the way, if anybody listening thinks that this is just kind of like feelings or beliefs, no, this is a systematic thing that was put in place. And I ran across an episode of Explained on Netflix. If you want to check it out, I don't want to explain the whole thing, but if you want to check it out, it's just all about the racial wealth gap and where it started. And it's only 16 minutes long, but it was the strongest 16 minutes that I've seen in a long time. And so if you want a little education, you want to see something, you want to get caught up on where some of these things started and where they were rooted from, it's an easy kind of like quick watch.
What after this, what positive improvements are made, if any, or do you think this is just a blip in time and things go back to the way they've always been?
I put out a call and I said that this is, but I always do this after every time after something like this happens, is that this is the moment where we can change. Now, I will say this. This is the first time that we've had so many people. And this is like now like a international thing. You have people all over the world who are involved in that, who saw this. And it's like, okay.
Yes.
Like,
When you get the French behind you, the French know how to protest, man. When you get the French behind you and you have thousands and thousands of people just saying, you know what, we were just dealing with a pandemic, but screw this. We're going to back up an inequality that we feel is not right. It's just straight up not right. You have to really take notice. You have to take notice. But the question you brought up was, what's going to be the conclusion of this? And I was thinking about this too. And I'm like, you know what? This is an awesome step, but for this to be like a revolution, I felt like this has to have more of a voice and an organization. This has to have, and not just somebody on TV, you know, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar giving a speech on CBS is not going to make it happen. You need to have somebody on the street with enough credit and clout and not afraid to step out of their mansion and be organized. And like, I don't know if he's been doing it. I'm off social media, so I might be in the dark here, but what is this? 7 days, 8 days into it. And I barely got the first nine. And I barely got the first headline that Al Sharpton made a statement.
Okay.
Al Sharpton? Barely, dude?
There are a couple people who, yes, in history, they have been very, you know, outspoken. But I think that mantle needs to be passed because we're expecting too much from, you know, certain people who have held the mantle for a long time. Right now, I think like in order for us to be able to move forward and things to be able to change, I mean, it has to happen. It's a multifaceted thing. It's not just this one, you know, linear solution, and it's just like, okay, yeah, we're all going to do this and everything's going to be okay. No, on, you know, one side, like this whole system of oppression and racism has to be deconstructed, and for that to be deconstructed, there are people who are going to have to be willing to let go of a certain privilege that they have been given. Now, I know when privilege is brought up, it's like a dog whistle for, you know, it's oh, I don't have privilege, you know, I don't, I work hard and all this other kind of stuff. It's like, no, that's not what we're talking about. That's not what we mean by privilege. But there has to be that, as well as, you know, within our own community, we have to organize a little bit better. We have to do things on multiple different levels in order for, I mean, that, what we do is, you know, kind of like, it's going to be a big thing, but it'll only be a drop in the bucket if that systemic racism still exists. We've had instances of where we've had, you know, Black communities that have pulled together and have been very successful, and systemic racism still existed and like literally bombed and burned those communities down. So it's something that has to happen all the way around.
I had just actually that just came up. Uh-huh. Newark, New Jersey. They're protesting, but like 50% of the population is Black. The mayor's Black, the attorney general is like Indian. I mean, when you have diversity, and they're the ones where the story came up because they're trying to like investigate why they haven't had any looting or any buildings on fire or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So this is like the one city that stood out, and they just had people. They just love their community. This is it. They love their community. They don't want to let people destroy it. You know, their community is them, pretty much. So when you have ownership, like what you're saying, the privilege thing, when you have ownership and you are part of the community, when you own a piece of the community, when you see other people and the community is you, of course you're going to protect it. Of course you're going to invest in it. Of course you're going to feel a certain love.
It's interesting because the other night, this is my energy has been pretty low since then, but a few nights ago we had looters come over. I live in a condo, and we had looters come over here and break into the building, and I have been shook ever since. But I also recognized when I actually saw the looting happening. I happened to be up during the time when it happened. There was this was during the time when like protesters had made it to Beverly Hills and Santa Monica and whatnot. And so all the police attention had been diverted to those areas. And so that was pretty much an opportune time for, you know, people who wanted to take advantage of the situation to do so. And so initially, you know, what was going on was before all this happened, I think people were celebrating. You know how Los Angeles is, you know, people celebrate, they get their fireworks, like the when summertime hits, everybody's shooting off these crazy like Disneyland fireworks and stuff like that. So that's been going on.
Gomez can tell you.
Freaking Gomez, 4th of July over here.
It's been 4th of July like all over. Like it's crazy because like that's all I hear is this boom, 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 pop, pop. And you see like, hey, where did you get these fireworks from? Like how did that firework make a happy face? That's crazy. They have Disneyland fireworks. But yeah, so they were shooting off fireworks. I mean, real fireworks. And about 1:15, 1:30 in the morning, I hear something that doesn't sound like a firework and it doesn't sound like an M80. We know what an M80 sounds like. It's really loud, or a cherry bomb. That wasn't it. This sounded a little different and it was kind of far off, but not that far. Me and Jordan woke up and we just kind of sat there for a minute and then we heard a second one. It was a little bit closer and, you know, we were just like, okay, maybe they found some kind of new firework or whatever. And then the third one that we heard was like, it sounded like it was less than a block away, but I couldn't hear from which direction it had gone on. And on top of that, there was a curfew. So there was like nobody on the streets. The street that I live on is not really well traveled in the first place, but it was like super quiet. Anyways, the third boom wound up waking up our daughter, who's like, she's 15 months now. But anyway, she wakes up, she starts crying. So I get up to go, you know, try and put her back to sleep. And then while I'm in her room, her window faces the street, the main street. And so I see all these cars pull up. Now it's like at least 20 something cars. I'm like, okay, what is this? And then I see all these people get out. And then the next thing I know, I hear boom, boom, boom. I hear the glass break. You know, Jordan tells me to come back in the room. He closes the door. He goes out. I'm with the baby in the room. But yeah, it was just like, it was crazy.
You heard that these are rumors of these people that are
I not even actually part of I'm the protests, kind right? of prone to believe that, because what wound up happening was the people ran up into the building, like the back door of the pharmacy leads them into the stairway to the building. And they ran up the stairs. And if they were from the neighborhood or they were from the community, they would know you can't get into the residential part of the building without like a key fob. You can't even use like your regular keys, the keys that they give you when you get here, because, you know, they turned everything over with the key fob. But
yeah.
When I saw the video, I actually saw the footage, and I could see, you know, some of the protesters, and I could tell that they were not from here. It's not to say anything, but this is a largely Black community. It is being gentrified, unfortunately. But it's a largely Black community. It's been with middle to middle upper class Black citizens. And on the other end is middle to lower income Black families, but it's still a really good community. But we could tell, like, there were the people that were there that came in were not from the community at all.
People mm-hmm. have been catching this on video lately, where protesters are grabbing these people and turning them into law enforcement, where they catch them like breaking windows mm-hmm. and just freaking hammering things. And if I'm dropping too much history lessons, whatever, just stop me. But there was one term that came up. I had to look it up, and it's a French term
yes.
called agents provocateur. And they brought it up, and I'm like, what is that? And I heard of that. So I looked it up, and I guess this thing has been going on for a long time yeah. in history, like going way back to Roman days.
No, go ahead.
Where no. Do you mind if I read this really quick? Okay, this is because I just the basic definition of this is like so frightening to me, because it's basically what we're seeing right now. But and really, if you think about it, an agent provocateur is a person who commits or who acts to incite another person to commit an illegal or rash act, or falsely implicate them in partaking in an illegal act, so as to ruin the reputation or entice yes. legal action against the target. Yes. or a group they belong to. An agent provocateur may be a member of law enforcement agency acting out of their own sense of duty or under orders or another entity. They may target any group, such as a peaceful protest or demonstration, yes. a union, a political party, or a company. Okay. Now tell me.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, they were talking about how, like, in some of these, like, hotspots, they have where protesting is, you know, going to be, they have like stacks of bricks, and there's like no construction, you know, pallets of bricks out on these corners and things
yeah.
like that. And so it's
yeah,
like,
exactly. I saw that.
Okay. One. Where is that coming from? You know, they showed, I saw an image of a, an undercover police officer in the midst of a protest, and somebody happened to catch a picture of him, and you can see him. He was dressed in plain clothes. So to somebody who wasn't really paying attention and was caught up in the moment, they would just miss him. They would, you know, but to this person who actually caught the image of him, you could see underneath his t-shirt, he had on a, you know, his body armor. There was handcuffs in his back pocket. You know, there was like a number of telltale signs to let you know that this individual was not just a regular protester, that he was out there.
Yeah. Hey, this just came up during the... mm-hmm. it's still going on, but the protests in Hong Kong, well, back in November, December, the law enforcement had hired all these like gang members and mafia members to dress in plain clothes and just start beating protesters like randomly in public to disperse crowds. So, I mean, they use the same tactic there.
The size of this movement is ridiculous. Like nobody's seen this before. I mean, where you have the whole world involved, you know, and so, and it's out of control. Like the government really has no control over it. This is under the people's control. And, you know, how do you get control? You have to figure out a way of dismantling it as quickly as possible and deter other people from coming in to join. And then those that are in it, you know, get them to say, yo, I don't think I want to be a part of this. This looks like some craziness. People are getting arrested. People are getting killed. People are getting jacked up. I don't want this anymore. So yeah.
God, so sinister though,
Huh.
right? I mean that is
Somebody.
just, I said it's so sinister.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean
Yeah.
no,
Real life is
I get
sinister,
that,
man.
Peter.
Real
I'm
life
not,
is
you know, I'm
sinister.
living in Disneyland over here.
Why do you
Yeah,
think I go there so
I miss
often? To
Disneyland, man. Oh my
escape
God.
from real life, man.
But it's somebody sitting down and planning, like in a meeting, and saying, this is how it's going to go
Right.
down. You're going to be here. You're going to be here. This is what you're going to do. And it's all so coordinated and worked out. I mean, that's.
Well, those tapes have came out recently because this guy keeps getting on the phone, and then people in other states are recording him and then just leaking that to the press. Trump, he's
Well,
already
yeah, no,
made
it
statements like that.
certainly feeds the agenda, right? You know, that's why the conversation has shifted,
Yeah,
or
exactly.
they've been trying to shift it from, you know, peaceful protests to riots.
Right.
You know, they want rioting to be the buzzword, you know, that people, when this happens, it's just people taking advantage
Right.
of a situation as opposed to really fighting for a cause. Because if you can obscure that, you know, then you can kind of diffuse the whole thing.
Right.
I don't know. I just I
Okay.
feel like so as where I said before, like I kind of felt hopeful at a certain time in my life. I feel like the future is really bleak, you know. I do. I because like,
I was being way over positive like mid-May. I don't know why. I just woke up and I'm like, you know what? Life's gonna be great. It's gonna all work out. This is before all this happened, but we're just contained to coronavirus. I don't know why. I just thought, you know what?
dude.
Life's gonna be okay. It's gonna be fine. And then I know. And then, like John said, Act Two started. What was it? May, the end of May.
It just really feels like somebody's
And
playing. I put this on my page too, but it really feels like somebody's playing Jumanji and we're like getting the short end of it. I mean, like we just had an earthquake too, like a couple hours ago, and I'm just like, God, like what next? And as I'm in, you know, I'm not willing for something worse to happen, but it's just like, yeah, like I kind of was on this thing like I've always been taught to hope for the best pre but prepare for the worst, and so but I couldn't hope for the best at this particular point, because I knew it was going to happen, and it happened, and it's depressing. Yeah.
today the verdict changed though.
The
I
verdict.
wasn't I was honestly I was shocked. Not even the verdict, the because they haven't gone to court yet. We know how that ends up happening. You know what the outcome of
Right.
that
Oh, but
can go
the
50-50.
charges. Yes.
But the charge went from third degree to second degree, and then
Okay,
they
so
brought charges against
this
the
is
other
what I
three
need
officers.
clarification on. Maybe
And
either one of you guys know this or I have to Google this later. But I need to understand the difference between second and third degree law, third degree murder. Thank you. I figured you would.
I looked it up earlier, but third degree has no chance of jail time, and second degree has a chance of up to 20 to 25 years. So not even, regardless, none of those charges
Right.
are
But what are
even
the parameters? So like
justifiable
I
of the
think what
action.
is it? Third degree is like they weren't trying to.
A charge of second degree murder requires prosecutors to prove
Okay.
that he intended to kill Floyd. A charge of third degree murder means the defendant acted without regard for
Okay.
human life but did not
Okay.
intend to kill. So that's why the third degree murder riled up everybody. And I don't know why anybody would still be pleased with the second.
Well, I think because I do understand first degree. First degree is where you go out with the intent to kill. Yeah, it's premeditated.
Premeditated. Yeah, second degree is not. They're both intentional. Third degree is manslaughter. First degree is premeditated. So it can't be premeditated because he barely met the guy.
Right. But they were saying that he really didn't meet him in the moment, that they were very familiar with each other because they worked in the same environment. They worked in a nightclub together. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Really? There's a history? Oh, okay.
That's according to sources. I'm not, don't know definitively. But there are a number of sources that say that, as a matter of fact, the owner of the club was the one that confirmed that they did work in the club together, where George was security and I don't even know the guy's name. I wouldn't even call him by his name, but he was the armed enforcer there. So, you know, like most clubs, it's been so long since I've been in a club. I don't know how long it's been since y'all have been in a club, but...
John? Pandemic, man. I was hitting it every weekend. You guys know.
But yeah, so the security team has to have somebody, you know, everybody could be there without a weapon, but there has to be somebody there that does have, that is armed, just in case something should go awry. But yeah, so these two were supposedly had been working in this club for at least a year together.
Hey, I never asked you. How did you know about the agents provocateur?
How did I initially know about it? I remember reading it in a book, but I also knew, like, from COINTELPRO with J. Edgar Hoover and the Black Panthers. I don't know if necessarily the people that had infiltrated the Black Panthers were agent provocateurs, but they were implemented by J. Edgar Hoover to help discredit and dismantle the Black Panthers. And that's all researchable.
Well, you guys have any lasting thoughts? I do want to ask you one thing before we leave. Thoughts in your mind,
on your heart? I've just been, if I get anybody that just blatantly says all lives matter or says absolutely nothing at all or does nothing in this particular moment, they know how I feel about them. That's basically it. And I love everybody. I really do. Like, there's not a harsh bone in my body that just makes me automatically not like somebody upon meeting them. But if you show me who you are, if you show me that you are things like racism, oppression of others, that you even support the likes of that guy. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything. Huh?
Can I give you guys a quick prompt real quick and then we'll end on that? Okay, so I'll start with John. John, here are the two prompts. In this moment, I feel
lost.
Okay. And my wish for this country.
For this country is to change its core values, and that would mean probably getting away from a society that benefits from division, because it does. If you're benefiting from division, there's no incentive to end things like discrimination and particularly racism and in particular violence towards Black men.
In this moment, I feel just sadness in my heart, and my wish for this country is change. Even if this isn't the change that'll happen, because I know there's going to be a lot more that needs to go through for a major change to happen, I just want some type of change. I don't want this... when we know who we're talking about. I just don't want this to repeat for episode 2, 4 more years. I just want some type of change. I don't care who it is. Even if Biden is half asleep, you know, I really don't care. I just want anybody else. Anybody else. Just some type of change. And
I was about to say, I think at this particular point, we vote for a broom with an upturned broom with a bucket for a head for president.
Just anything.
Anything. In this moment, I feel.
In this moment, you feel?
Numb and hopeful. Numb because I'm afraid of letting my emotions drag me where I've been before with this. hopeful in this fact that, I'm seeing more people outside of the community recognizing and taking action. My wish for this country is that my daughter doesn't have to grow up and give her daughter the talk outside of the birds and the bees talk.
That was an awesome talk. I love you
Thank
guys.
Thank you for having
really,
us.
Really
I love you too, Peter.
Thank you for taking the time.
You know, bringing us here to be able to do this. And John, I'm sorry if I like just ran over the whole entire conversation because I love when you speak outside of the whole mom thing.
and of course you're bringing that up. Well, I'm not going to be left out of this love affair. I'm going to say I love you too. And Erica, look, the thing is, there's no better voice. There's nobody that should be talking in this conversation more than you. So I am always happy under any circumstance to take a backseat to you, because I just think you're an intelligent, extraordinary woman. And I've always said that, and I've always felt that about you, long before this ever happened. And Peter, you're welcome. And Peter, yeah, thank you for just creating this opportunity and being who you are, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, guys, have a good night. I know
we did,
man. Can you believe we talked for 70 minutes?
Yeah.
70 minutes. I think we probably could have talked for another 70 minutes. But my energy, like, as soon as 10 o'clock hits, my energy takes a nosedive. But have a good night, and then I'll... All
right, thank you.
Get everything.
See you guys. All right.
Bye.
Please come back to any future projects that we put together. And we really appreciate all the support that we've had. So do you want to start?
Yeah. I also want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to this. I think it's a cool project. It's going to be a neat time capsule for all of us, because this is such an interesting time. And interesting is to say the least. So yeah, this first email here is unknown. It's from Anonymous. And it goes like this. In this moment, I feel like I need to listen, educate myself, and actively dismantle the structural and institutional racism around me. My wish for this country is sustainable transformation in our communities, an end to systemic racism and state-sanctioned violence, and investment in education and resources that allow marginalized populations to thrive.
Next email we got was from Miss White, and she says, in this moment, I feel proud of all the people risking their safety in the streets to fight for people they may never meet. My wish for this country is that it becomes a place where all people can expect justice and to have their needs met for food, housing, healthcare, and education. Everyone deserves to feel safe and secure in their lives. We have enough that there should be no need for so many to struggle for those things.
Okay, and this next one is from Mr. Weintraub. Whenever I think about how this moment is making me feel, the word I keep coming up with is heartbroken. I was born in 1970, at a time when we felt, for maybe the first time in American history, that the arc of history really did bend toward justice. We were told, and I long believed, that our generation would be the first to see true racial harmony. Now, 50 years later, I often feel like it was all a lie. The racists never went anywhere. They just learned how to camouflage themselves. Today, it seems they can't even be bothered to do that. At the same time, I am allowing myself a small glimmer of hope. After far too long, it seems as if people outside the Black community are starting to care about this issue. Perhaps there will be progress in the future, but only if all Americans are committed to fighting injustice. Some people right now may wish for unity or harmony or understanding or whatever. My wish is simpler, that we no longer have to live in a country where Americans of African descent get murdered with impunity by those specifically tasked with protecting them.
This next email is from Miss Janice. In this moment, I feel gratitude and a sense of responsibility. I'm grateful for all of the people who have come together to support and love humanity as a whole. I'm also grateful for the people who have done the same in the past before us. I feel like it's our turn now. My wish for the country is awareness and strength. Be aware of the difference between right and wrong, rights and injustices, and then the strength to love and stand for humanity together.
All right, and the final one here is from Mr. Ramirez. In this moment, I feel Black Lives Matter. My wish for this world is that we recognize that we are all more alike than different.